Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and our guest this week, writer Ruth Clark. Each week at this time, we visit with authors, editors, or publishers who have regional or local connections. We hope to find out a little about their lives and what prompts them to write. We give them an opportunity to read some of their work for us, and we're very pleased to have Ruth Clark join us again today. Welcome, Ruth.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Ruth Clark has written in many genres over the years, but What Goes Around is Ruth's first full-length novel. Her first publications, Before the Silence and What We Hold Dear, were history books. But even then, she used fictional characters as narrators, an element several readers have called magic realism. Her short stories have appeared in numerous anthologies, and her journalism has been published in daily and weekly newspapers and magazines. She is a veteran of the writing and publishing community, where she was promotion manager for a publishing company, co-founder of a book distribution company, and she has worked for the Writers Union of Canada and the Canada Council's National Book Festival. Some of our listeners may remember that she developed and ran the Ganaraska Writers Colony in Port Hope. She now divides her time between Canada and Latin America. So welcome again, Ruth.
Thank you.
So when you were last here, Ruth, you read a short story called Witness for us, and now it's become the first chapter of your novel. Remind us about that story and tell us what inspired you to use the corpse in the well as the springboard for What Goes Around.
I wrote Witness after meeting a parrot that spoke in Spanish, saying, "Don't hit me, don't hit me." It was a rescue bird that a couple had, and that haunted me. And so I created a story around that, in which a New York artist recovering from a divorce moves to Costa Rica, and he finds a body in the well, but he's alerted by the resident parrot. And he finds out that the parrot is saying, "Don't hit me, don't hit me." And his cleaning lady runs water one day, and the town water is gone, but she goes to the well, and the water is very smelly. So he looks and finds a body there. So that was the chapter, and Don Verde, the parrot, was the witness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And he really existed.
He really existed, yeah. Yes.
I think that's so cool.
Well, I hope he still exists.
Yes.
So when you started turning the short story into the book, did you plan to write a ghost story or a crime novel or a romance?
The working title for this, and I sent it out, that draft was called The Perfect Time for a Crime. And that came to me on New Year's Eve when I was blasted out of bed by fireworks. It had gone on since November. It's Purísima, where they celebrate the Virgin Mary's power and whatever. But the Nicaraguans love fireworks, and they went from the end of November till the beginning of the new year. And it startled me, and I said, that is a perfect time for a crime. Other than that, I don't know how things came about. I mean, I went to the bank, I saw them taking strong boxes out, and then I asked one of the guards, "Do you have a basement here?" And I said, "I'm a writer.
I'm not planning anything.
But then I did plan this, and then I had a dentist in Nicaragua, and he learned what I was doing, and he said, "I have a friend who knew William Walker, and he knew the tunnels, and you know." So it evolved, and it's magical how it happens. And I don't go and chart stuff out at all. It evolves, and it seems like once you breathe a little air into the characters, they take on lives of their own
and do things that you don't necessarily expect.
That's exactly right. Exactly right, Gwen.
Now, this book is set in Central America, where you spend several months every year and have been doing so for some time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how important is the setting to this novel?
I was fascinated in a historical character, and I wanted to do something with him. And he was a little tyrant. He was like a little Napoleon. He was only president for 1 year. He was from Tennessee, William Walker. And I don't know how it all came to... Well, I learned about tunnels and things like that, and then I saw all the banks. I wanted, maybe one will go this way. So I think Central America exudes a lot of spiritual things. The muse is there for me, for sure.
Yeah, and I guess the setting itself has a kind of a passion about it. It's not it's not a quiet setting like Canada.
No, it isn't.
I mean, I say that. I guess the North has its own majesty, but when I think of rural Ontario, it's peaceful and quiet.
That's right.
There's not a month's worth of fireworks and and colorful parrots.
No.
Well, perhaps you will read to us then a little from What Goes Around.
Okay, I will. I'll give you a little background. So the woman who was found in the well, her name is Isabella. And we're going to go to the second chapter. And Marco is the husband of the dead woman. Marco Alvarez Soto had ridden all night. He and his horse, dark silhouettes pounding along the shoreline, the low tide in their favor. At times, Isabella and the parrot loomed before him in the moonlight. He'd cried out, screamed at them, but the waves swallowed his mournful sounds, and he was alone with his misery, riding north. Tears diluted the blood that dripped down his face, and at times he couldn't see, but the chestnut mare knew the route to his uncle's ranch. Exhausted, Marco was hanging on to the horse's mane when it stopped in front of the barn. He slid off, unsaddled the mare, and tethered her in the yard where flakes of hay lay scattered on the ground beside a full trough of water. Marco stuck his head in the trough, washed his face, and dried it off with his red handkerchief, which came away darkened with blood. He felt his head. The gash had congealed and was starting to scab. He staggered to the barn and fell asleep on a pile of hay. He would explain in the morning. The old man's gnarled hand was on his shoulder. When Marco opened his eyes, he looked up at his uncle, hovering above him, bathed in light like an angel. He thought he was dreaming and that his uncle had passed on. He sat up, realized it was mid-morning, and the sunlight was pouring through the doorway, backlighting his uncle. He clambered to his feet and hugged him. His uncle returned his embrace. Their frames trembled with emotion, but neither said a word. His uncle would wait to learn why his nephew wore a bloodied shirt and had a blood-encrusted scalp. Tio Vicente, Tio is Spanish for uncle, Tio Vicente understood trouble. He'd served time for cattle rustling in his youth. He'd been mixed up with smugglers for several years, had made a lot of money, and never got caught. But when his wife died several years ago of a heart attack, so had his criminal tendencies. They walked back to the house, and Tio poured them both coffee from a thermos. Tio Vicente had never remarried, and by the neatness of the house, it appeared that he either had a housekeeper or he had become a domesticated widower. Marco sipped the steaming strong coffee, took a deep breath, and told Vicente as much as he could. "I'm in a bit of hot water right now, Tio," he began. He took another sip. "I have to leave Costa Rica, leave my farm, and disappear for a while. Can you help me?" His uncle's eyes were upon him, but he said nothing, just stroked his long white mustache and nodded for Marco to continue. "I need you to call my parents, Tio. Tell them I had to go to Nicaragua, that they should sell the farm and keep the money. The deed is in my father's name anyway. Will you do that for me, Tio?" Vicente agreed to call Marco's parents and made the call in Marco's presence so he'd know it had been done. Vicente was non-judgmental and didn't pry. He knew that Marco would tell him, or not, all in good time. "Stay as long as you want, son," he told Marco. "Be good to have you around for a while." The old man was lonely, and he would enjoy his nephew's company. "Maybe you can help me prune some of the mango and avocado trees, branches I can't reach." "Dad told me you fell off the ladder last year and broke your arm. How's it feeling?" "Oh, it's okay. Slow to mend at my age. I have to be careful." "Sure thing, Tio. Anything you need. Be glad to help." Being active would distract him, reduce the time he spent thinking about Isabella. His uncle was easy to be around, like his father. They were both comfortable in silence. They didn't need to talk all the time, like other people who feared they'd disappear if they were silent. Tio Vicente had become religious. He prayed before his meals and read the Bible in the evenings. Marco hadn't remembered this about him, but he hadn't spent much time with him since he was a kid. Marco bowed his head in respect at mealtime, but his mind was not focused on God or the Blessed Virgin Mary.
Well, thank you. They are interesting characters. Well, thank you, Ruth, for reading from What Goes Around. We've been talking with Ruth Clark, a writer in many genres, but here today to talk about her new novel, What Goes Around. And now we'll take a short break.